You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The 92nd State Assembly District has traditionally been held by Democrats, but in 2016, longtime Assembly member Chris Dano was defeated by the Republican candidate. Now incumbent State Representative Treg Pronshinsky of Mondovi is facing a challenge from Galesville Democrat Rob Grover. Pronshinsky is the owner of a construction company and has served as mayor of Mondovi for 4 years before being elected to the State Assembly. Rob Grover worked several years as a corrections officer for Trumbull County and most recently is the owner of a pizza restaurant on his family's farm near Galesville. The 92nd District is all of Buffalo and Trumbull counties and west central Jackson County and includes communities like Fountain City, Gilmanton, Trumbull, Arcadia, Whitehall, and Black River Falls. The debate between Rob Grover and Treg Pronshinsky was recorded earlier this week at the WPR studios in Eau Claire. Here's moderator Rich Kramer.
So first off, I will start with Treg Pronshinsky, incumbent, and I'll ask you both the most basic question before we get into the more detailed ones, and that is, why are you, Treg Pronshinsky, why are you running for a second term? What do you think you bring to the table here?
Well, I don't think much has changed since the first run in 2016 of why I'm running. There's a couple of factors. One is that I'm a father. I have a daughter that's 13 years old. I deeply care about her. And I deeply care that she's successful. We need to pave the way as leaders of our state to make an environment that is going to make her successful as well as her classmates and the youth as well as folks that are adults right now. We need to have success not just in the 92nd in our state as well as our country. And another reason is that I bring a lot to the table when it comes to local government. I was the mayor of Mondovi for 4 years. I know what struggles small communities have as well as large. But I bring a lot to the table with experience with that as well as being a small business owner. I know some of the struggles that are out there with red tape and regulation that we have, and it's tough. And you know, my platform is keep taxes as low as possible and come up with the best services we can with that. And as well, I'm a huge proponent of law enforcement myself. I am a volunteer fireman. I've been part of the ambulance commission, and I take that stuff to heart. We need a voice in Madison to protect our people.
Thank you, Representative Pronshinsky. Same question goes to you, Rob Grover. Why are you running to represent the 92nd, and what do you bring to the table?
Yeah, well, thanks for the question, Rich. And I just want to start off. I didn't realize this till we were driving up here today that the governor's father had passed away last night. So definitely want to give my condolences to the governor and his family as he's going through that. I can't imagine dealing with that. So prayers definitely go to the governor at this time. But, you know, I'm running because I'm just really passionate about rural Wisconsin. You know, I was born and raised right here in the district. I'm actually the fifth generation to live on my family's farm down near Galesville. My great-great-grandfather came there in 1852, and 166 years later, we're still living on that piece of land. So I love where we're from. So, you know, I grew up on the family farm. You know, I was educated right in the district here in good public schools. I, you know, worked as a corrections officer, as you mentioned earlier, for 5 years with the Trumbull County Sheriff's Department, and that opened up my eyes to so many issues that we're dealing with in rural Wisconsin. And as you also mentioned, in 2016, I took a leap of faith, left my job there, and opened up a small business called Wing Haven Pizza Farm, right on my family's farm. And, you know, going through all those experiences, every one of them gave me such an interesting perspective of struggles that we face here in rural Wisconsin. When I'm knocking on the doors, and I've pounded on thousands of doors all over Buffalo, Trumbull, and Jackson counties, I always talk about rural economic development. And that's my big focus. And to me, that means helping young entrepreneurs start and grow small businesses in rural Wisconsin and also helping farmers, you know, stay on their family farms. And so many issues come out of, you know, that rural economic focus that I have, whether it be having consistent funding for our roads and schools, consistent funding for our education system, trying to make health care so that if you're working full time, if you're not a bum, you actually can afford it. You know, things like that. So dealing with the drug epidemic, you know, again, coming from a corrections background, I dealt daily with drug addicts, and I saw firsthand how drugs are just devastating our families. So I just think we need a new direction down in Madison right now. My motto for this campaign was in the primary. primary. It's the same now, and it'll be the ethic I take down to Madison is people before party. I think these partisan games, both on the Democratic and the Republican side, that we've seen played with issues that affect average folks' lives have not led to good policy for rural Wisconsin, for Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. So, you know, I'm running again to bring a new voice, to put people before party, and really focus on rural Wisconsin.
Thank you for that, Rob Grover. I'll stay with you, and then I'll go to Representative Pronchinsky. But so, you know, what's at stake in this election? What do you think the biggest issues facing the 92nd Assembly District are? You mentioned a few already, but are there any that come to mind as far as top concerns?
You bet. So healthcare, it's a perennial issue. You hear about it every day at the doors. And again, I think both parties have sometimes offered some solutions, but both parties have played incredible politics with our healthcare in the district. You know, one of the scariest, most intimidating things, frankly, about opening a small business like I did on my family's farm was, you know, I had great insurance working as a corrections officer for the sheriff's department. But leaving that job, you know, I was under the prospect of having to find insurance on the open market. I tell you, it was expensive, and it you know, definitely was cost prohibitive, and it's certainly cost prohibitive for a lot of people in our district. So healthcare is a huge piece of that. Education, as I said before, too. You know, I think when I talk to just members in the community, I talk to school board members, I talk to people that have children in the district. You know, what they say is they want consistent funding. You know, they don't want funding for our schools to just be a political issue that when it's a campaign year, you know, rural Wisconsin gets some focus when it comes to their schools. So definitely, again, we need to really reform the funding formula. Both parties have talked about it for generations, but we haven't seen anything done with it. And our infrastructure. I mean, it's the same thing as I mentioned with education. You know, we need long-term solutions to our infrastructure funding. But when you talk to members on townships, you talk to people just in their homes, they complain about their roads. So again, we need a consistent solution to how we're going to fund our roads in rural Wisconsin. You know, where I live, I've got one small bridge down at the end of the valley. And if that bridge goes out, my business can't operate. Ferguson's Orchard, which is my next door neighbor, they can't operate. There's about a dozen homes that live there. So again, we need a consistent solution for how to fund our rural infrastructure. And again, I'll just throw in one more. There's so many, but broadband internet access, essential. I think, you know, when you're out talking to people, one of the biggest complaints you get is how slow their internet is. And it's not about getting on your Facebook or connecting to your Netflix. You know, it's about running a business, right? I mean, I pay thousands of dollars more a year to run my business because we have to use satellite internet. It's about connecting with your healthcare provider. It's about being able to telecommute to work. So if Western Wisconsin, if rural Wisconsin is going to have a 21st century economy, we have to connect people to broadband internet access. And we have to take it as seriously as our grandparents did when we were focusing on rural electrification, making sure that every home, you know, if you flip on a light switch in Wamondi or you flip on a light switch in downtown La Crosse, right, the light comes on just as quick. It needs to just be the same when it comes to our internet. If you're sending an email in Wamondi, if you're sending an email in La Crosse, that email should make sure it actually can be sent. So a lot of issues I care about. I'm passionate about them all, and I just think we need to stop playing politics with issues that affect average folks' lives.
Thank you for that, Rob Grover. Representative Pronchinsky, you know, what do you say is at stake in this election and top issues for you in your reelection bid here?
Well, there's a number of issues that are important. I mean, you can put one above the other and say that's the most important, but, you know, we need a well-rounded state. There's no doubt about it. And issues at the 92nd are very similar to a lot of other districts, but, you know, I'll just go back to my daughter. And she's going to be in the workforce someday. And if you look at our unemployment rate in the state as well as our district, it's under 3%. Mm-hmm. And businesses are screaming for skilled workers. And I go back 25 years when I was getting out of high school. You know, you had opportunities. There were jobs there that you could get. And you had to work your way up at the skill level. And I want to see those things change where we're educating these kids in schools, high schools, getting the skill set that they need. And with a technical college degree, they could be in the workforce within a matter of 2 years or even less and contributing immediately. I think that that's very important. When you look at our district, we have an aging demographic. A lot of the folks are getting older there, and we don't have as many young kids coming up through the ranks. So we have to fill those jobs. That's an important issue. Healthcare was touched on by Rob over here talking about that. That's definitely an issue. That's front and center. Everybody is going to have health issues at some point in their life. We need to have good services. We need to have good insurance. And we shouldn't have to be worried about pre-existing conditions. And we worked on that last session where I voted that pre-existing conditions will be included. They won't be denied. I think that's very important. But we need to keep working on those issues going forward. Very important. Listen, health could hit you at any time of your life. It could be today. It could be 50 years from now, your issues. But we need to take care of that. And, of course, education as well. We do need to continue with education in our programs to make it better. That is a huge, huge factor going forward because it's up to us as adults. And it's up to me as a lawmaker right now to make sure that our youth has the path to be successful.
Thank you for that. We're speaking with the candidates running to represent the 92nd State Assembly District. For context, the 92nd Assembly District includes Buffalo and Trempealeau counties, along with central western Jackson County. Communities inside the district, Arcadia, Black River Falls, Blair, Independence, Mondovi, and Whitehall, villages of Alma Center, Cochran, Leva, Ettrick, Hixton, Maryland, Pigeon Falls, Strum, towns of Franklin, Gilmanton, Hale, Northfield, and Wamondee. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. Representative Pronchinsky, excuse me, I will go to you for this question. It has to do with the arrests by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Over a four-day stretch at the end of September, ICE agents arrested 83 undocumented immigrants throughout Wisconsin, some of them from within the 92nd Assembly District. A press release from ICE said that more than half of those had criminal histories. 16 of them had no prior interactions with police in the U.S. Immigrant right advocates have condemned the arrests, but groups seeking to reduce immigration praised the action. So, local law enforcement in Wisconsin said that they didn't have any prior notice, which is a bit of a break from the past. So I wanted to get your take, since immigrant labor is a big, big factor with regard to farming in Wisconsin. So what did you think when you saw the ICE arrest? Were you glad that they were following federal law, or did you have concerns about how it might impact the local economy or local people?
Well, there again, we have the discussion of needing workers, and it's no secret. We need people in the workforce. And, you know, immigrant workers have been great across my district working in farms. There's no doubt about it. They bring great assets to the agriculture industry as well as manufacturing. And, you know, you talk about the arrest there that, you know, law enforcement did not know. The local law enforcement did not know that this was going to happen there. You know, you got to remember, we have a federal government. They have laws, and they follow their laws, and that is their job. And, you know, I would think that local law enforcement at times would know that these things are going on. And, you know, you talk about the arrests where we have some of them that had a criminal history. You know, these people need to do their job. And obviously, they came in and they arrested these folks. But if you look at our immigration in general, we have some illegal immigrants living in our country. And I wish the federal government would step up and come to a solution to these problems, because I don't think anybody should live in fear that they know that they're not supposed to be here and they don't have an avenue to continue doing what they're doing or get back out. So that's where I'm at with that.
So some of the state options that have come up in past years would include, you know, some kind of it's a federal issue for sure, but state lawmakers can advocate for certain things. And there has been discussion by, you know, folks like Congressman Sean Duffy and Senator Ron Johnson about, you know, coming up with some kind of a better or a more comprehensive worker visa, you know, some kind of a temporary status. And also there's a discussion about – there has been discussion about getting provisional driver's license to folks that are undocumented so that at least they're not breaking the law when they're on the road. Would you support any kind of efforts at the state level to try to push for those sort of things?
Well, there again, I think that we talk about the work visas need to be better. Absolutely. I think they do need to be better. I mean, we're not the only state that have a problem finding workers, okay? And really, we are all immigrants. It's just a matter of when we came to the States. And, you know, we've been able to reap all the benefits. And you talk about the driver license program there. I wish the federal government would give the states the okay to say we could do that. But now, keep in mind, that doesn't mean that we're going to have a process for driver's license and it's going to cost other taxpayers dollars for them to get them. If indeed this, there would be a plan, I would have to say that the actual licensee would have to pay for that, and that would have to be a self-sufficient program.
Some sort of a self-funding mechanism. Got it. Thank you, Representative Pronchinsky. Rob Grover, your thoughts on the ICE arrests and, you know, what kind of answers do you have or would you advocate for if elected when you've got this population that is vital to farming and other industries, yeah, but yet breaking the law to be here?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, again, living on a farm, you know, have my neighbors being farmers, I see how important the immigrant population is to our agriculture industry. You know, my neighbors, the Ferguson's Apple Orchard, right now they've got a big contingent of immigrant workers picking their apples, right? And I have an interesting, probably unique perspective on this because I did work within law enforcement as a corrections officer, and we worked pretty closely with ICE officials when we would have people come in, you know, that were arrested. So we would work with them to figure out their immigration status, to see if there were warrants, things like that. What I find so troubling, there's so much hypocrisy when it comes to our immigration system right now. You know, we have a system that we depend on these workers, and at the same time, at the federal level, people don't have the guts to, you know, actually make some hard decisions, pass some laws, fix our immigration system so that it actually works. And that's what's incredibly frustrating. I think we've got so many politicians that don't have the guts to, again, make the tough decisions that we need. And I'll just I'll also speak to the how you mentioned how law enforcement was perturbed that they weren't informed that these actions were going on. And actually, the day after these raids took place, I was having some beers with a couple of my buddies that work for the sheriff's department as deputies. And, you know, that's a real safety issue, frankly, because the Trumbull County Sheriff's Department actually got some calls from concerned people because they didn't realize the agents going in were ICE agents, you know. So there was concern, like, who are these people? Local law enforcement got calls of people going into houses. Well, that's a deadly situation, right? So it's not just about, like, you know, whose turf is it? It's about safety as well. And thank God, you know, no one was hurt, no one was shot. But that could have happened, you know, if some of the local law enforcement had showed up, not knowing the circumstances of what was going on at the location there. So, listen, we have a broken immigration system. You know, we need to have one that treats all people with dignity. At the same time, we have to have a system that enforces laws, right? I mean, a lot of the people that ICE was going after had active warrants, and that's incredibly legitimate. They have a legitimate purview to do that. So, there's so much hypocrisy. We both depend on these workers, and yet our you know, our elected officials at the federal level, I don't think have the guts to actually fix the system. So we definitely need incredible reform. We need to elect people up and down the ballot that are willing to at least work on this problem, not just treat it as a political football and use it to get elected.
You're listening to the 92nd State Assembly District candidate debate on Wisconsin Public Radio. This district includes Buffalo, Trempealeau, and West Central Jackson counties. If this is your district, do you live in places like Arcadia, Blair, Alma Center, Aliva, or Franklin, just to name a few stops? I'm Rich Kramer, and the two candidates in the November 6th general election are joining me in the studio today. They are Democrat Rob Grover from Galesville and Republican incumbent Treg Pronchinsky from Mondovi.
That's WPR's Rich Kramer in Eau Claire. He moderated a debate between candidates for the 92nd State Assembly seat, representing all or part of Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. Coming up, we'll hear more from the debate. The candidates are Republican incumbent Treg Pronchinsky of Mondovi and Democratic challenger Rob Grover of Galesville. They'll discuss the issues of frac sand mining, local control, and their approach to education funding. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also find more debates between regional candidates facing off during the November 6th election. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're featuring a debate between the candidates for Wisconsin's 92nd State Assembly seat. The district includes all of Trempealeau and Buffalo counties and West Central Jackson County, covering communities like Hatfield, Hixton, Independence, Galesville, Mondovi, and Wamondi. First-term incumbent Treg Pronchinsky, a Republican from Mondovi, is facing a challenge from Democrat Rob Grover of Galesville, in a district that has traditionally voted for the Democrat. The debate was recorded earlier this week at our studios in Eau Claire. Here's moderator Rich Kramer.
Rob Grover, since you were last to respond to the last question, I'll start with you on this one. Has to do with sand mining, and this is an issue that, as a reporter, I cover constantly. The Department of Natural Resources last week announced that they are not going to issue any citations for the release of 10 million gallons of wastewater from the high-crush frac sand processing plant in Whitehall. That happened in May. The DNR says they're taking no action because high-crush emptied a holding pond in order to save the life of a worker who was trapped underwater for more than 2 hours after a bulldozer he was driving slid into the pond. That is enshrined in state law that what discharges like this can happen if it is to save a life. Do you think that the DNR made the right move? There's a lot of people that are concerned about what was in that water. There were some heavy metals that did get into the Trempealeau River. And so do you think the DNR was correct in their decision?
Well, that's a great question. So first of all, you know, thank God they were able to save the young man that was in that accident. I mean, I know the family. They're great people, and I can't imagine going through that. My gosh. Big hats off to our local law enforcement, to our emergency service responders. I mean, that was a all-in effort, and the fact that man is alive is a miracle, and it speaks to how incredible our law enforcement officers are and those people are, people that I worked really closely with when I was corrections officer. So I actually would like to take that spill as a learning opportunity. That wasn't something they foresaw happening, right? Well, they should foresee seeing it happen in the future. So let's take that awful accident as a learning opportunity and make sure that in the future that there's other mechanisms in place so that if you do have to drain the holding pond in a very quick fashion, that, you know, there's things in place where it doesn't get dumped into the river. If the DNR has made that decision, I don't know all the intricacies of the law, basically, and where liability falls with that. But at the very least, we have to learn to do better. And that's where I'd go with that. But on the larger issue of sand mining in general, right, you know all about it, contentious issue in western Wisconsin. What really disappoints me about how that whole issue is being handled is the state government has tried to sap away the power of local elected officials to make decisions about, you know, industries like sand mining. And they've also they've voted, our elected officials in office now, basically voted to take the power away from local elected officials to hear testimony from their neighbors. You know, if there's a sand mine being built next door to me, I should have the right to be able to come over to a local township meeting where that's being discussed and say, hey, you know, I'm worried about my possible quality of water. I'm worried about my air quality. I'm worried about the light pollution. I'm worried about, you know, our roads and that sort of thing. But the state government has stripped away, again, a lot of the power for local elected officials to do their job, to listen to their constituents. constituents and have a say in these really big projects. And I think that's incredibly disappointing. You know, I think sand mines have a place in our Wisconsin economy, but local elected officials need to be the ones that are having say, because they are so closely connected to their neighbors, right? I mean, township officials literally are next door neighbors to the people they represent. And so again, when it comes to sand mining, we've got to return a lot of that power back to the local elected officials, and we have to empower the DNR to do its job. You know, so much funding has been cut from the DNR, whose purpose it is to make sure that, you know, the water quality is being maintained, that the air quality is being maintained, that sort of thing. So I really think we've seen such a bias towards the industry and not enough emphasis also put on the quality of life of average folks living around these sand mines. I think there is an actual balance that can be reached. But unfortunately, again, like all these issues that affect average folks' lives, we've seen so much politics injected into it, and we're not getting good, sound policy that is good for everyone actually out of it.
If I could follow up, I was unaware that the state lawmakers, the state legislature, had passed legislation that took away the ability to hold public hearings on that. Can you explain what you're talking about?
Yeah, it wasn't that they couldn't have public hearings. And I wish I had the bill number, AB something or other. Hopefully someone will come in and remind me of that.
Well,
I was talking, but it basically what it said is if you come to testify at some of these meetings, you have to bring like scientific evidence. Hmm. You can't just come with, you know, just your opinions or your thoughts. And I'm simplifying what the bill actually said. I hope someone will call in and correct me on what it was, AB something or other.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I wish I could quote it for you.
There's
but it basically,
hundreds of them.
Lots of them. But it basically stripped the ability just for an average person to come and just share their opinion. You know, it made the burden much higher. For what kind of testimony had to be given.
Okay. I'll have to follow up on that. So, Representative Pronchinsky, your thoughts on the incident and the DNR's response. I mean, all parties are glad that no one was killed in the accident, but there are neighbors who say that, you know, there still should be some accountability with regard to the company and their discharge, which was fairly large. So what's your take on all of this?
Well, I'm going to first off say I am so pleased that someone's life was saved. And when I read the press release that came out that afternoon, as I was reading it, I couldn't believe what I was reading, that somebody went into a pond and were there for upwards of 2.5 hours, and they survived. What an undertaking by the emergency services. The firemen, the volunteers, the workers there, as well as law enforcement, to expedite this guy to get him out of that pond. And, you know, this question brings out the firefighter in me. You have to improvise. You have to take some steps sometimes because you're saving someone's life. And you don't necessarily sometimes think as quick as you'd like on the best possible way of doing it. You just do what your instinct is. And I don't think anybody there wanted to affect the environment that would hurt them or anyone else in the future. And they did what they had to do. And I know a lot of people caught a lot of heck over it. And the bottom line is someone's life was saved. A father's life was saved, a husband's life, and a son. So we could go on and on about that. But as the question was, is am I pleased or am I okay with the DNR not finding this company? Well, it is a learning experience. No one ever thought that someone in a bulldozer was going to go to the bottom of a retention pond.
Mm-hmm.
That just wasn't in the cards. Well, we have to roll with the punches and the changes and the knowledge we know and change some things. And do I want it so restrictive that no one can move any dirt anywhere near a pond? No, but we need to use some common sense if we're going to take some measures. And, you know, it was talked about if we could release water and it wouldn't go into a watershed. Well, maybe some of these plants that have that opportunity, it's there because there's space. Maybe some of them don't. And, you know, that's another issue. Another issue is, and I talked about this at the Trempealeau County meeting, in Whitehall after this incident is the buffer zones around these mines. That might be something that needs to be looked into. But, you know, mining is an economic impact, whether it's sand or metallic, and it's an economic impact in our area that has some benefits. And I understand the people that live around it, they have, some issues in their lives. But back to the question. They did what they had to do, and I'm okay with that.
1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment, Rob Grover, you wanted to respond?
Yeah, I did find that bill number, and it's a little esoteric. But if you want to Google it, it's AB 479, and ended up being Act 67. It was in reaction to actually the All Energy versus Trempealeau County
lawsuit
that came up. It basically had to do with the conditional use permits, and it limited, again, the kind of testimony that neighbors could give to elected officials. So, it was a bill that was voted on, by our current representatives that stripped power from local elected officials to listen to their constituents, to listen to their neighbors.
Representative Pronchinsky, are you familiar with the bill?
Yes.
So what, you supported it. Why?
Yeah, well, If there's a law in the books for someone to get a conditional use permit, you shouldn't deny them because someone doesn't want them to have that. Mm-hmm. They have to come with facts and reasons why that's going to directly affect them or their assets. And it is very, very touchy sometimes in local government hearings or meetings. And you just can't say someone can't do that because I don't want them to. And that's with anything. Mm-hmm. And if the mechanism is in place for a conditional use permit, they shouldn't take those things into consideration. I mean, it's fair for one person. It should be fair for another. And that's not just with mining. That's any agriculture practice or any manufacturing or anything for that matter.
Trigg, if I'm your next door neighbor, and we have about 300 acres of land, or you're my next door neighbor, and I want to open up a sand mine, shouldn't you at least be able to come and give your opinion how it might? I think your air quality, your water quality, how it affects your life would be something very legitimate. If I want to open up a sand mine on my, that you should at least be heard. Now, at the end of the day, local elected officials are really smart. I mean, I think about my good friend, supporter Barb Tock. She's the chair of the town of Arcadia. And she's a really intelligent woman. And I just think this idea that neighbors shouldn't be able to tell her their thoughts on how a sand mine might affect their livelihoods or their quality of life, I don't know how you can justify that.
Well, I'm not saying that anybody couldn't have an opinion and talk about that.
That's
it's
what the bill,
it's
that's
in the
what
consider
the bill, you know,
one at a time, push, please.
Yeah. It's in the consideration of granting the conditional use permit. If you have 25 people that say that, let's use your business, for instance. Maybe if you have live music there, you have 25 people around there saying, hey, we just don't like live music. We can't tolerate that. That's hurting our way of life. We just don't like that. But yet you gave a conditional use permit to someone else to have live music and something similar to you. You can't take into consideration someone's opinion around their property when it comes to you. When it gets down to a conditional use permit you've granted to someone else, how can you say that you can't give it to someone else if they go through the same hoops and regulations?
Well, we did go through that process. We had neighbors come because there were some concerned about live music and that sort of thing, and it was a really useful process. I guess at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I think we need to take average people's opinions into account as much as possible when we're making decisions that affect their quality of life. And I think stripping that power from local elected officials and giving it to bureaucrats in Madison, I don't think that's the way to go.
Gentlemen, let's go to the phones now. We've actually got a caller that is speaking to the local control issue. Willem in Colfax, you're on the air. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, about the issue of local control, I heard at the last legislative session that they tried to pass a bill that would restrict local ordinances to be able to, like, restrict hours of operation. I know that the sand mining industry, they want to operate 24/7, and some local ordinances don't allow that. So this bill was an attempt by the state legislature to basically say that you don't have the right to control what happens in your township, and I think that's very undemocratic. And let me say one other thing about, I too am glad that this young man's life was saved. But these sand mines are a threat, a slower threat to life. Some studies have indicated that life expectancies can drop by 11% in areas close to these mines. Sand, silica sand, is not a suspected irritant. It is a known carcinogen. It has been a known carcinogen for 30 years or more. So I think they always say when I call, Wisconsin has a long tradition of sand mining. I've lived in Wisconsin. Never has there been any sand mining on this scale, like the proposed Albertville Valley mine is 1,200 acres. That is unheard of in the state of Wisconsin, a mine of that size. And I think that to restrict people's impact and the economic impact, the studies have shown that local property values drop by 24% in the area close to these mines. So someone profits, the landowner, the leaseholder profits. But I, in this case, lose 24% of what I've invested my whole life in is my property. So how is that fair? How is that just?
Thank you, Willem, for the question. We were talking just now about legislation that has to do with conditional use permits and the testimony and the evidence that is considered by town boards, et cetera, counties. So now this goes to the bigger issue. There have been attempts by the industry and also some lawmakers in the state legislature to have the state be the one that issues these permits. And the argument for why that needs to be done is that some towns have members that are pretty much either openly or not, they're opposed to sand mining. So you've seen some towns use fees or whatever to try to keep them out. That's what the industry says anyway. So, Treg Pronchinsky, what do you think about that aspect of local control? Would you like to see the state issuing these permits, or do you think it should be the locals?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I do like to see local control, no doubt. I don't like to see it get out of hand. We need to do it within reason. And, you know, there's a lot of things that state government has gotten their fingers in that maybe they shouldn't have, but also I've seen a lot of times that it's probably a work all for well, and you know, you got to take in consideration on where these sand mines are at. We in my district, there's a lot of bluffs, and the transportation of the sand is an issue. Some has rail, some doesn't, and in other areas that they're doing sand mining, it's very flat and it's very efficient. These companies want to be efficient, and there's particular areas that they have the sand and they can be efficient, and I think that's where you get these topics here. But I think in the end, I think local control is probably the best mechanism for this. And you know, being a local politician or a local elected official, I think that local control is the way to go. But when we look at conditional use permits, there's criteria that you have to get any conditional use permit for anything. And it shouldn't be someone's opinion that is the deciding factor on these permits. If you're fair to one, you need to be fair to all.
Thanks for that. Rob Grover, your thoughts on, I guess, the broader topic of local control and who should have the ultimate say in issuing a local permit or a conditional use permit.
Yeah, well, I won't parse my words about it. Local elected officials should make those decisions. They're the closest to the people whose lives are affected, you know, by these sand mines, frankly. And again, I think sand mines have a place in our rural economy, but we have to make sure that average folks' lives aren't being affected in an incredibly negative way. So, you know, this trend we've seen from our state government to sap the power from local elected officials to decide quality of life issues, I think is such a turn backwards from where we need to be right now. You know, I just reference all these really great township officials that I've gotten to know just throughout living in the 92nd my whole life and being a small business owner and now running for office. They're smart. They're intelligent. They want economic development. They also want it to be done responsibly. So 100% of local elected officials need to be making these decisions. I think sapping the power from local officials to do that is, again, a big focus on putting the interest of corporations before the interest of average folks. And they can be balanced. We can balance them. But the trend we're seeing in Madison right now is just not the way we need to be going.
Voters in the 92nd State Assembly District, along with all other 98 Assembly Districts, are 29 days away from electing their next representatives. The 92nd includes Buffalo, Trempealeau, and West Central Jackson counties. If you live in Mondovi, Hixton, Maryland, Pigeon Falls, or Wamondie, you live in the 92nd Assembly District. I'm Rich Kramer. Republican incumbent Treg Prochinski and Democratic candidate Rob Grover are in the studio with me today. Rob Grover, I'll start with you on this next round, and it'll have to do with school funding. We've talked a little bit about, you mentioned it specifically, that the funding formula is broken. I've heard it in the 8 years that I've been doing the show from candidates on the Democratic side and Republican side, but I don't seem to get any straight answers as far as what the solution is. It's a big issue. The current funding formula is based on things like enrollment, property taxes. It's a whole stew that goes into it, and many argue that it disadvantages rural schools. So this state budget that we're in right now, the governor increased funding by $200 per pupil, and there was a bill that increased sparsity aid for districts like rural 92nd Assembly school districts. So what would you like to see with regards to the school funding formula? How would you like to change it?
Yeah, and you hit it on the head. I mean, it's a perennial issue. I think it's been talked about for the last 20 years, frankly, this idea
since
that—
Since 93, I think.
Yeah, since that rural Wisconsin isn't getting its fair share back. And I will say, hey, I think it's positive that there was some more funding put in the budget for rural schools, and it's about time. But I think what's unfortunate, when I talk to a lot of, again, both taxpayers, people of children in the district, school board members, what they think is really disappointing, and I tend to agree with them, it seems like rural Wisconsin, rural schools get a lot of attention when it's election time. But, you know, when it's not an election year, we don't see a lot of progress made. I mean, we've seen education funding in this state cut consistently for over a decade, basically. And it's a really scary trend, frankly. So, you know, I think a piece that we also can look at when we're looking at the funding formula is calculating poverty rates as well. You know, there was a talk earlier about how unemployment's so low, and that's a good thing in one metric. But the reality is, when I'm out talking to folks, a lot of folks are working 2-3 jobs. They're living in poverty, basically. They're working poor, right? And because of that, you know, the property taxes the way they are, funding for schools, it can get really difficult for them. So even though we've seen some additional funding, I think there's reforms that could be done to the formula, again, including taking into account the poverty rates of the school districts, because despite the low unemployment, there's a lot of poverty in our district, a lot of people that can't get by, a lot of people that aren't seeing their wages increase. So, you know, it's a huge issue. And what's unfortunate, we've seen such partisan politics played with this issue by Democrats and Republicans, I think, for far too long. And, you know, another issue we're really struggling with in rural Wisconsin is retention of teachers. You go back years ago, and you would get 100 applicants for a teaching position, and you could really, you really could be picky, frankly. And we're getting a lot less applicants to our teaching positions because, you know, these jobs, frankly, aren't as appealing, excuse me. And also, you know, we've seen a decline. I mean, I love living here, but there's been a decline of quality of life as well, because again, our state government hasn't been focused on rural Wisconsin. So attracting young people to become educators and work in our schools is a huge issue as well. So we definitely need to reform the school funding formula. It has to be consistent. We have to consistently have what we need to educate students in rural Wisconsin. It can't just be during election years when a political party needs votes that we inject money into our rural schools. So what I'll fight for when I get down to Madison is consistent funding, consistent, not based on election years, funding for our rural schools.
And I'll follow up with both of you, too, on this. But first, you, Robert Grover, school choice, do you think state tax dollars should be going to private schools?
So I've always followed politics since I was a kid. And when school choice was first talked about, I probably was in grade school. And I actually followed this. It was Annette Polly Williams down in Madison, a Democrat, who thought this would be a really good idea, right? Because you only get one shot at educating a student. So the thought was, let's get students out of schools that you know, aren't producing great outcomes and get them in schools that do. And I actually, frankly, I would have supported it back then. But now the results are in. You know, voucher schools, charter schools, they aren't creating better outcomes for students. You know, students aren't testing better and things like that. But also, you know, we are seeing money because of charter and voucher schools who aren't doing a better job of educating students. We're seeing dollars pulled from Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties for our schools. And I just think that is not the way to go. Public money should go to public schools. You know, I'm a person of deep faith, and I see real value in our parochial schools. But the reality is, if I want to send my child to a Catholic school, I'm Catholic, you know, I should be the one paying for that, frankly. So again, voucher schools are, I think, a big ideological project, you know, but hasn't actually done good for our students and actually hurts schools in Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties.
Thank you for that. Representative Pronchinsky, as far as the school funding formula is concerned, do you support the current model, or do you think it needs to be reformed? If so, how? How do we do that?
Well, our job is to make things better no matter what the issue is. And if I had the magic wand, I'd wave it and say our formula is the perfect formula there is. But unfortunately, when we look at things, and I've said this time and time again, we need a well-rounded Wisconsin. And we talk about our education. And I'm proud that we put in $630-some million into education this time around. And when I hear my opponent talk about, you know, it's an election year plore, I'm up for election every 2 years. And I had one crack at the state budget. And I was very proud to put that money into the budget for my schools and schools across the state because I think the kids deserve that. And we need to educate them as best we can to get them ready for the workforce. And when I see my daughter go to school, I hope that she's getting the best education she can. And when she comes home, I hope there's results. And quite frankly, there is. And it's going good. And I was glad that we were able to put more money in there. But when it boils down to it, 132 legislators, we have a school funding formula. Some are doing phenomenal. Some are not doing so good. And I think that they also need to have some guts and say we need a well-rounded Wisconsin. And that's important. But it takes a big undertaking. It's just not one person going to Madison saying we're going to fix this. You have to be willing to give and take and work together. And I think that I've done a good job of doing that the last 2 years. And listen, our kids are our future. I can't say it enough. We need well-rounded kids. We need well-rounded adults. We need healthy homes. We need healthy communities. And education is what number one thing that's a good start. So I'm sure you're going to follow up on the voucher. Why don't you ask that question?
What do you think of voucher schools? You support the public money going into these private schools, sometimes religious schools.
Yes, I did. And you know, private schools, there's some advantages there for kids. And I think it's up to a parent to choose on which direction they should go. And there's schools that are failing, no doubt about it. And these vouchers they get is saving the state a lot of money when you look at Milwaukee County and the Milwaukee School District. So if we didn't have those, that's extra money we'd need to be throwing to those schools. And where would we come up with that? Something else would have to give. We'd have to raise taxes, or we'd have to take away from some other programs. So as of now, I think the voucher program is working out. And if you're a parent, you should have a choice.
That's 92nd Assembly District Representative Treg Pronchinsky of Mondovi in a debate with his Democratic challenger, Rob Grover of Galesville. The debate was recorded earlier this week at our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire and moderated by Rich Kramer. The 92nd State Assembly District has traditionally been held by Democrats, but in 2016, longtime Assembly member Chris Dano was defeated by the Republican candidate. Now incumbent State Representative Trig Pronchinsky of Mondovi is facing a challenge from Galesville Democrat Rob Grover. Pronchinsky is the owner of a construction company and served as mayor of Mondovi for 4 years before being elected to the State Assembly. Rob Grover worked several years as a corrections officer for Trempealeau County and most recently is the owner of a pizza restaurant on his family's farm near Galesville. The 92nd District includes communities like Fountain City, Gilmanton, Trempealeau, Arcadia, Whitehall, and Black River Falls. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also find more debates between regional candidates facing off in the November 6th election. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.